icons are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 77, Phil to the Rim. Thursday, May 14th, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yinhu Chaiyuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yinhu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. This week's episode includes the following segments: Sheep to Shawl, Ever Expanding Skill Set, The Front Porch, and so forth. Are you participating in Me Made May? This is an invitation to the sewing community and the fiber arts community, all types of creatives, to wear handcrafted or handmade garments and accessories during the month of May. I am offering some handmade prizes to folks who post on Instagram and use hashtag YAYHMMMAY15 for Yarns at Yin Hu Me Made May 15. You don't have to post every day to be eligible. Just post a photograph of yourself any day you're wearing something handmade in the month of May. Prizes include a hand-sewn project bag, some handmade Rolags or cosmic wonder worms for spinning. These are particularly nice for drop spindle spinning, and I can customize them to the colors of your choice if you wish. And then I think there's also a pattern prize. I forget what the third prize is. You have a chance to win those prizes, so head on out and participate in Me Made May. This past Saturday was a Sheep to Shawl session, the fifth of the year full of sessions, and it was just a sweet, sweet, sunny spring day. There was a lovely breeze. The campus of Fibercraft Studio and the larger Waldorf Training Center was just out in spring blossom. It was just wonderful. I started the morning having coffee with Deb. Deb is Little Red Hen on Ravelry, and she offered up some additional yarn from her stash for a prize for listeners. So I will be telling you about that at some future date. So we chatted, we had coffee. It's never long enough. And then I needed to head over to Fibercraft Studio, where we were talking in the morning. We talked about our progress of spinning. And during April's session, we had left with samples of various different types of fiber. Our primary source of fleece is a set of fleeces of Jacob sheep from Jenny Jump Farm in Warren County, New Jersey. But in our April session, we were invited to take some samples of other types of fiber, sheep fiber as well as other animal fibers, and spin it up and talk about our process and our experience of doing that. So it was interesting to see what everyone had taken and what they came up with. I had worked on carding and doing singles spinning of Clunfarist fiber and Lincoln fiber. The Clunfarist was wonderfully soft and springy. It was very easy to process with my hand carders because it had a relatively short staple length and it spun up very nicely. I made a pretty hefty center pull ball, and then I saved the center pull balls that I made so that I could work on plying during the May class session. The Lincoln was a little more challenging, being a longer wool. I think maybe just hand teasing it, or perhaps using combs, which I may acquire at some future date, would have been a smarter way to prepare it. So I fought with it a little bit to get it into the form of some very loose roll legs, or loose roving, I suppose, to spin. But it spun up very nicely. I also wound that into a center pull ball so that I could pass that around to classmates. At the Fibercraft studio, we sit in our morning session in a very large circle, and everyone has a basket lined with a cloth, and then you put things into that basket that you would like your classmates to see and touch and pick up, and we pass those around as we talk. So I had put both center pull balls into that basket with a spindle, a drop spindle from Snyder Spindles. This is kind of, I guess it's just over an ounce spindle, and it's in this kind of steampunk style, really nice for plying. So I had that in the basket as well. Both of these singles plied up very nicely. The yarn looks plush and soft, and there's just something a little bit softer and more pleasant about spindle spun plied yarn than wheel plied yarn. I tend to ply a little more tightly when I'm using my wheel, and the yarn can lose that softness and even a little bit of its luster because it's so tightly plied. So I really like that process of using the spindle to ply. Another activity period during our day at Fibercraft Studio is work time. And so in the past couple of sessions, I didn't think very carefully about what work I was going to do during the class. And if you don't go prepared, then you sort of end up whiling your time away a little bit. So in the May session, I thought very carefully, okay, what am I going to leave for myself to do during the work time? And I left the plying, which was perfect because that's very easy to do while talking. It's easy to pick up and move around. And I was able to ply all of the yarn that I had spun into singles in the month before. I think my classmates were inspired to bring additional kinds of fiber for everyone to try. So I left the May session with some Polypay, some Romney, some Navajo Churro, and more Jacob fleece. And I have been washing and preparing that fiber for spinning. None of it is spun yet, but that is my goal before our June class. The new learning we did at Sheep to Shawl had to do with plant dyeing. We were told to bring a jar. I brought a jar that was a little too big, but I was supplied with one. And we had our choice of 5 different types of plant materials to choose, and we were given fiber that had already been treated with a mordant. There were madder root, red and yellow onion skins, yellow cosmos, and marigold to choose from. I chose red onion skin. I think I was the only one who chose that. We put the plant material into the jar, poured in some very hot water, let that sit for a little bit, and it was important when pouring in the water initially not to fill to the rim because you still need to put your fiber into the jar. So then we took some fiber, put that into the jar, then added water to fill to the rim, secured the lid tightly, and then we put them outside in the sun to start working their magic. My jar of fiber and red onion skin is still sitting outside. Our instructors told us to wait about a week until we emptied it and rinsed out the fiber. So that's what I intend to do. And in the meantime, I'm starting to think about all other kinds of plant materials that I could use as dyes. I'm also interested this summer, and this is sort of tangential, in attempting some rust dyeing. I have secured some rusty materials, and I'm on the hunt for very large jars. Rust dyeing does not work with animal fibers. They become brittle and start to break down when exposed to the rust, but it can work very well for plant fibers. So I have purchased some natural undyed muslin, and I would like to experiment with the rust dyeing. One way is to make a dye bath of rusty liquid. A second way is to pre-treat the fabric and then place rusty objects on top of the fabric, wrap it up so that everything stays moist, and then you can see the imprint of the rusty objects. And then yet a third possibility is to add black tea to the rust dye bath, and you get this amazing steel gray color dye. I have no idea if this will be successful, but it's something that I am intending to try this summer when I have a little more time. My schedule is a bit more free and I can play with a process to a greater degree. I'll be sure to keep you posted. Oh, one other thing I wanted to mention about the Fibercraft Studio is an upcoming sheep and wool festival. This will take place on Sunday, May 31st from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's held rain or shine, and the location is Fibercraft Studio in Chestnut Ridge, New York. There are lots of activities, especially for younger children. There should be some animals on site, different kinds of crafts. There's an auction, great natural, delicious food, lots of things to see and do and learn, and in the beautiful setting of the Threefold Institute campus. And that's where the Fibercraft Studio is located. I will put a link and some additional information on my website, yarns@yinhu.com. But if you're looking for a great family activity, this is it. You would have a fantastic time. And this is Sunday after Memorial Day weekend. Ever-expanding skill set. For hashtag Power Pantry, the exploration of how to build a better pantry and cook from your pantry, we're taking a look at specialty items in May. And my question to Yarns at Yinhu listeners is, what do you keep on hand to make a meal special or to dazzle unexpected guests? Or what makes you feel like, you know, you've really got this thing under control as far as Power Pantry is concerned, and you're ready to knock them dead? I've opened a thread for May for folks to share ingredients, and there's already some great discussion going on over there, and folks are listing things that are really specialty items in their pantry. I thought I would mention a few that really do make me feel like, I guess they make me feel like I'm a kitchen goddess. One is to have a bar or two of very high quality chocolate in my pantry. I feel like this lasts reasonably well, and it doesn't take a lot to make a spectacular chocolate cake or to coat something in chocolate. I even add high quality chocolate to a chili or other meat dishes where I use ground turkey instead of ground beef, and it gives them a little bit more heartiness, a smoother mouthfeel, and a depth of color and flavor. It's pretty interesting. I like to have high quality butter on hand. I think someone else had mentioned Kerrygold butter. I feel like to mount a sauce with that kind of butter, or just add a pat of that to some steamed vegetables, just makes regular into something sensational. I like whipping cream for the same reason. I think even a store-bought dessert or something really hasty is suddenly very interesting with whipped cream. It's always nice to have a few exotic liqueurs on hand to be drizzled into the whipped cream or drizzled over a dish. I like to have a jar of lemon curd. It makes me feel fancy. Sun-dried tomatoes, I think, are a great addition to a lot of dishes and add a depth of flavor, as well as fresh herbs. Always make you look like you know what you're doing in the kitchen. And my number one specialty ingredient is Applegate Farms uncured Sunday bacon. My sister and her husband work for Applegate, and I've become a convert over the years to Applegate bacon. Unless you're going straight to a butcher, there's really nothing you could buy in a grocery store, in my opinion, that equals the tastiness of this bacon. And you only really need a few slices crumbled over the top of a dish to make it incredible. I am also not opposed to using the fat in the pan as the basis for a sauce or to saute vegetables. Everything is spectacular when you use Applegate Sunday bacon. It also freezes very well, but I usually will just fry up most of the package when I buy it and just keep the cooked pieces on hand in the refrigerator. They crisp back up when you reintroduce them to heat, and then you don't have to go through the length of time to cook bacon from the start. And it's also a really nice way to season my cast iron pans, is to just cook a lot of bacon in there. And if I've been a little rough on them or some things have been sticking, cooking a few slices of bacon always seems to clear that up. Those are my specialty ingredients. What are yours? Head on over to the thread on Ravelry and let me and other listeners know. The front porch. On the front porch is a summer spin-along called Jenkins Summer Surprise. I like to participate in spin-alongs. They usually last a month or thereabouts, sponsored by Jenkins Yarn Tools. And I found out about this one, which involved buying a Nunoko fiber kit and spinning along with other folks who will be using their Jenkins Turkish spindles. What we did after we indicated that we wanted to participate is that we ordered either a smooth or a textured bat, and we had no say whatsoever in the colors that arrived. So mine arrived a few weeks ago. The color is Summer Garden. It consisted of a 25 gram bat, kind of a mini bat, and then 14 chunks of 5 grams each of combed merino top in a variety of colorways. And as Summer Garden suggests, they were brights and pastels. They were not really my comfort colors. So this was already pushing me out of my comfort zone. Then there were two little piles of silk noil and a bunch of purple sparkle. In the first few weeks, our task was to blend this fiber in any way we chose to prepare it for spinning. And I suppose doing nothing with the fiber was also an option. But most people were blending using drum carders, blending boards, hand cards. And some people were just dividing things into smaller pieces and arranging them by color. I decided to use the blending board to make very tight Rolags. I'm not sure if these were punies or not. They're quite fine Rolags. And I paired the different colors so that I had a kind of fraternal twins where one color was predominant and then another was sort of a nuance to that. And then in the twin, that nuance color was predominant and so forth. And then I arranged these Rolags in an order that I would spin them and then eventually make a two-ply. I've included some photographs on my blog to make the explanation of this process a little clearer. It was pretty complicated, and I did have the input of my student spinners because I did this during club meetings at school. Beginning on May 15th, we can start spinning our fiber using any Jenkins Turkish spindle that we wish, and we can ply any way that we like. We can ply on a wheel if we like, or a spindle. I suppose you could also full singles and leave them unplied. I will definitely be creating a two-ply yarn. What's interesting in participating in one of these spin-alongs, and this is my second, is just seeing what so many different people do with the same kind of task and materials. Just the different strategies and the things folks are excited about and the colors that they're worried about. It's just such a diversity of approaches that it's really impossible not to learn something. I had some very hot pink in my fiber, and it was giving me fits a little bit. And I learned later, because the Nanoko ladies kind of chimed in and gave some suggestions after I had already blended my fiber, but I learned that if you have a color that you think is too bright or is just distasteful, you just really don't care for it, one way to approach it is to take that color, divide it up, and blend just a little bit of it into everything else that you're blending. And it just sort of spreads it out and almost makes it disappear. My technique was to take two rather neutral and muted colors that I received in my package and use those to blend into the brighter colors and try to tone them down a little bit. I'm not sure if I was successful, but I've certainly spun colors that aren't necessarily my colors, so I'm not worried about it. I think that every color is appealing to someone, and these Rolex will make a really interesting gradient, I think. I did decide to blend the silk noil only into a small portion of the Rolex. So the entire yarn will not be textured, but there will be a section of it that is textured. And I think that will be interesting when I eventually knit that up into something, like maybe into a shawl, that there will just be one portion of the shawl that will show that textured fiber. So we'll see how it goes. Also on the front porch is Hain, is a summer weight sweater designed by Kirsten Johnstone. I'm using Shibui linen yarn in the clay colorway. It's a beautiful, beautiful pattern. It is a very slow knit. I am not even completed with the doubled hemline. I think it's row 21, where you pick up one stitch from the beginning of the knitting and put it on the needle with one stitch from row 20, knit two together, and then move on. From there, that's the point where I am now. So I have not even 1 inch of this garment complete. I don't know if completing it by the end of May is really a possibility at this point, but I still like the garment. I like the knitting. I don't think it's too challenging. It's just really slow going. And one of the reasons for that is this garment is knit flat and will be seamed together. So even though it's a stockinette stitch garment, there's purling on the wrong side rows. And that's challenging, particularly challenging with this linen yarn. The danger, though, in joining it and knitting in the round is that there can be kind of a weird bias, and some funny, funky things can happen when you knit with linen or other plant fibers in the round. So the stitches I have in using this method of knitting back and forth are very nice and even. I'm not sure about the measurements. I've decided to knit the garment on US size 4 needles, which gave me a gauge slightly larger than what was specified. So I'm knitting the smallest size. I know this fabric softens and loosens up considerably with blocking. So I'm hopeful that after I put this much effort into the garment, it will fit. We'll see. I am certainly nervous about it, but I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the color. I'm enjoying the weight of the fiber and knitting with the linen. So we'll see how it goes. And I look forward to giving you more information as I proceed with this project. And so forth. I am so very pleased to report that I have completed the feather skirt project, begun months ago, which encountered quite a few snags, but it has turned out it's a wearable garment, and I wore it today. I began with the intention of making the Birds of a Feather maxi skirt with a tutorial by Anna Maria Horner on Creative Bug. I was successful in making the beautiful applique feathers, which require a strip piecing technique, very careful cutting, and sewing and seaming these applique feathers together. That all went well. Then I attempted to draft a pattern for my own maxi skirt and sew it. That did not go well. The fit was terrible. I created enclosed or encased seams on the side, which were incredibly bulky and turned out not to be a good idea. So I decided not to retry that technique of creating my own pattern, but to go to an established pattern for a skirt. And I had been working from the Heather Ross book of weekend projects. And there was a pattern in there for a wrap skirt of 8 panels and a waistband that looked relatively simple. So I decided to make that pattern and then applique the feathers to that skirt, which worked quite well. I wish I had done the waistband a little bit differently, but I love the flare of the wrap skirt and I love the ease and wearability of the skirt. So I definitely want to try maybe with a lighter weight fabric to make that skirt again, maybe again and again over the course of the summer. I did lengthen the pattern pieces because I'm 5'8" and I don't like a long skirt to hit me mid-calf. I feel like it's a very dowdy, you know, Mrs. Cleaver kind of look that doesn't appeal to me. So I lengthened the skirt pieces a little bit and I also used a bit less of a seam than was called for in the sewing directions and that added a bit of length as well. I decided to use only 4 of the 8 feather appliques because with the wrap skirt, it seemed sort of futile and might look kind of weird and off-center if I tried placing the feathers all along the skirt. I also thought that having things in the back of the skirt isn't very slenderizing, and maybe it was more flattering just to have, you know, a plain color in the back with no busyness and sort of put the party all up in the front. So I hand appliqued the feathers to the skirt. That was laborious, but I do feel like I got a lot better at the hand applique technique as I went on. The 4th feather is definitely the best looking, and the first one is a little wonky looking. And then I hand stitched the hem for this skirt as well. I did a very simple rolled hem. That was also incredibly time intensive, but it looks very nice. I'm glad I did not machine sew the hem to the skirt. I think the drape and the way it falls is much nicer with the hand sewing on the hem. I took the initiative to add a buttonhole in the waistband of the skirt so that I could pass one of the ties through the skirt to the front and avoid some of the bunching that was happening when I was putting the skirt on and just trying to wrap it around. I practiced making a very long buttonhole several times on some scrap fabric and felt like I really had it all down. And then I put the buttonhole into the waistband of the skirt. And then easiest last step, right? Take the seam ripper and rip between that buttonhole. Well, I was a little overeager and I went right through the side of the buttonhole into the fabric of my waistband. Not too bad. I could fix it with some hand sewing, but it does look a little bit sloppy around that buttonhole. So another time I will know to go very, very carefully with the seam ripper through a buttonhole. I have a brand new seam ripper, So I think that was part of the problem. I didn't realize how sharp it was. But I completed the skirt, ironed it nicely, and wore it with pride today. I think this will definitely become a part of my summer wardrobe. I realized I hadn't thought very carefully about what I would wear with the skirt, and it's a little bit challenging to match a top with something that bright and that intricate and patterned. But I will work on that as the summer goes on. And I've already lined up my next sewing pattern. Barring any catastrophe, I will be sewing the Schoolhouse Tunic by Sew Liberated. I ordered this pattern through the mail, so I have the paper pattern, and I also purchased at my local fabric store some fabric that I can use to create my own version of the pattern. These patterns, paper patterns, are so expensive that I don't really want to just cut out my size and discard the rest. I want to be able to make different sizes or maybe let my sisters borrow the pattern and make sizes for themselves, or even, you know, just the lack of confidence that the first size I pick will be the correct size for my fit. And maybe I'll want to alter it or look at different pattern sizes to make something that fits me well. So I'll be tracing the pattern onto this fabric and then using that as my template. I have not yet purchased fabric for this pattern, but I do want to use something light with a really nice drape. My mission is and continues to be to find a few patterns that are flattering, I can wear with ease, I could make in a variety of weights and colors, and just create a very simple hand-sewn wardrobe for myself. I feel like there's a lot of information lately, or maybe I'm just paying more attention to news items having to do with the quality and the safety and the materials that are used in textiles and clothing making. And I've spent a long time thinking very carefully about what I eat and where it comes from, but not so much about what I wear and where it's come from and how it's made, who's responsible for that, and how environmentally responsible my purchases are. And I think maybe this is sort of the next frontier in a consciousness about the quality of my life, that I start thinking about all of these concerns and making changes. It's not something that can occur overnight. I think this will be a slow process. But it's something that I do want to change. And I think that even already taking control over even this small aspect of making my own clothing and thinking about how things are made has been not only a satisfying experience, but it's been a very informative one. So I guess that's, you know, the ever-expanding skill set and the post-apocalyptic skills that just keep revealing themselves the more I think about these topics.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stone to sand. It's a subway nitrogen. Yes, a subway nitrogen. Yes, a modified nitrogen. Yes, a modified nitrogen. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire, just like Linda Curtis, but out on the wire. It's a subway nitrogen. It's a subway nitrogen. It's a modified nitrogen. It's a modified nitrogen.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet. Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes, liking the show's Facebook page, or taking part in the conversation on the Yarns at Yinhoo group on Ravelry. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.